Helen, welcome to the Memory Dump 64-Bit. It is 11:41 a.m. on Tuesday, May 5th, and today we're back to like normal topics and stuff. I think you covered pretty much all you wanted to do with quantum computing in that shorter episode.
I did it, but I don't think we should do another episode. I think we need to move on to other things.
Yeah, because we don't have a whole lot of time left. Effectively, I think we only have like a few more weeks, huh?
If our listeners are really interested in that kind of stuff, there's all kinds of cool videos on YouTube that go much more in depth because they have more time to talk about it.
I was reading like a small interesting thing about quantum computers last night and like how they use like qubits to like actually calculate the information and how they calculate all possible variables of a situation at once, as opposed to just linearly, like normal computers.
It's the theory of superposition that allows that to happen. That's the whole point behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, let's say that the computer is looking for a specific word on a page out of 31 million pages. A computer today would just search through every single page quickly, but one at a time in a linear fashion. Mm-hmm. Whereas a quantum computer would search them all at once and find the one with the thing you're looking for and return it to you.
Yeah.
So theoretically, that's millions of times faster. So that's interesting, but not a topic for today.
Still, it's very cool because it probably is the future of computing, because anyone who has a quantum computer can just destroy anyone with a regular computer when it comes to cracking codes, creating codes.
Yeah. It would be like going from riding a horse one day to piloting a jet the next, when that actually works out. But anyway, so today, because you know I love Tesla, we're going to talk about a new innovation from Tesla. I'm not sure if we'd call it an innovation. I guess the way they're implementing it kind of is.
They took a product and made it viable and better.
Yeah. So Elon Musk has his fingers in all kinds of different pockets, in a good way, not a bad way. And he actually came up with the plans to fund the company Solar City, but didn't have enough time and gave the idea to his cousins, who now run it and is now a successful solar panel installation company. And so Elon Musk has been really vested in alternate power sources and such. But one of the problems with solar panels is that when you generate more electricity than you consume, ideally you're supposed to be able to sell that electricity back to the grid. I haven't really heard any instances where that actually happens, because the electric companies have been so just resistant and hard to work with in those situations.
I mean, with good reason. If what are you going to do if you don't sell it back? They know you're selling it back no matter what. Why would they pay you for it?
Yeah. Actually, if you're not selling it back to them, I guess you could just not use it and it just burns up,
I suppose, but that's real spiteful, I guess. All right.
And some statistics Tesla published is that really peak energy usages are slightly during the morning and then most heavily during the evening and night, but during about noon, when solar energy is most abundant, energy usage is almost flatline.
Yeah, because most people are at school or work, they're not at home using power.
Yeah, and the sun's out, nobody's got like house lights on or anything like
that. Pretty unfortunate.
Yeah. Isn't that convenient? So a lot of the solar energy gets burned up, you can't even sell it back, it's a little bit useless unless you have like a ton of space dedicated to huge lead acid batteries in your house somewhere, which are extremely inefficient, extremely expensive, and extremely hard to upkeep. So that's why Tesla has launched their new product called the Powerwall, which is essentially a 10 kilowatt battery pack that looks a lot like a boogie board, actually, and has roughly the same dimensions. Everyone was really surprised about the price. Everyone was speculating, it's going to cost like $30,000, maybe $40,000. They probably won't even sell it directly to consumers. It'll just be on a lease basis.
Wait, people were saying that the 10 kilowatt hour battery would cost $30,000?
Well, no one was really sure about what the capacity would be.
Okay.
Yeah. But the 10 kilowatt is only $3,500. I was there at the launch event, and when he said that, everybody started cheering, and I was even like, wow, that's pretty good.
Just buy one just to have one, you know, it's so cheap.
Yeah. And, a 7 kilowatt variant for $3,000. Obviously, 10 kilowatt is a much better value.
Yeah.
And you can also connect these power packs together, up to 9 in a series, For a total capacity of 90 kilowatts in case you live on like a giant compound and your name is Fidel Castro or something.
I actually have a friend who lives up in the mountains and he doesn't even get internet. So he has to use his phone's data as a Wi-Fi hub. So maybe this kind of thing might be useful for him in case there's a power outage or something.
Yeah. But I think the average house doesn't draw nearly that much. I don't know. Those are some statistics I'm not entirely sure about. But for the most part, I would imagine that a 10-kilowatt pack would cover, like, most people, 20-kilowatt at max. But, yeah, they look a little bit funny because when you connect them, it's two together with a little bit of a curved bridge between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So two, maybe three looks okay, but up to nine would just look weird. But anyway, and they also launched an industrial version called their...
Power Pack.
Yeah, which is a little bit more of a generic name.
It sounds smaller than the Power Wall.
Yeah.
But it's actually bigger.
Yeah, and it looks like kind of your generic big power structure type thing. On the outside, it looks like a transformer, but when you open it, it actually looks exactly like a server rack, and that's exactly how it operates. You just pull these little power cells out of even the power wall, slide it into the power pack, and connect it, and it's now storing power.
Yeah.
So really easy to use, and theoretically, as Elon Musk said, infinitely scalable. So technically, with enough of these, and this was even part of his demonstration, you could power the entire country, which would be...
Yeah. He was talking about powering the entire world with it. You'd need about 2 billion of them.
Yeah.
And he was mentioning how that might sound unreasonable, but there's 2 billion cars in the world, so why not battery packs?
Yeah. So again, this is really efficient. Now if you create excess energy from your solar panels, you now have a way to store it. In case of a blackout during the night, you now have a way to power your home. Even if you don't have solar panels, it's still pretty nice because you can. It's kind of a smart battery.
Mm-hmm.
So you can program it to charge during off-peak hours when energy is like 10 cents a kilowatt during night, and then use the battery's energy when energy prices are at their peak at around noon or the evening when it's about 50 cents a kilowatt.
Mm-hmm.
So you can save money that way. So even then, even if you don't have solar panels, eventually it would pay itself off.
Yeah, I've heard stories of people not even just using it to save money, but selling it back for a profit and making money every month. And after something like 7 or 8 years, the battery's paid for itself.
Yeah. So again, same principle. Buy it for 10 cents a kilowatt at night, sell it back to the grid at 50 cents a kilowatt during the day, and you're selling the grid's own power back to itself for a profit.
Yep. I mean, you're also doing a service for the community. I mean, the reason it's such a higher price is because more people need power at those times, and you're providing it in a way, so there you go.
Personally, I was hoping that there would be more interconnectivity with the car. Like, maybe you could, like, plug it into the car, and, like, it would provide, like, it would just dump all the energy in the battery quickly into the car for a quick boost or something.
If there was a direct supercharger line from the power wall to a car, it would not cost $3,500.
No, yeah, exactly. I'm sure that would raise the price point. But something else to consider is also that the power wall does not come with the necessary inverter. Obviously, since it's a battery, it's DC, and to run through your house, it needs an AC. So you still need to consider the cost of installation and the inverter. And
that's
actually pretty
disappointing.
Yeah, I have no idea how much an inverter might cost. I wouldn't imagine a ton, but that is a little asterisk that Tesla threw in there.
All right, but it's not just a power wall. They announced an entire new division called Tesla Energy. They have their own website now. And they were talking about how the future is solar panels. And I was pretty skeptical in the beginning. I was talking to you about this. Well, wouldn't that require too much surface area or something? Isn't the future nuclear fusion because of like how much space you need for that kind of stuff? But during the announcement, he actually showed how small of an area you'd need. And it was about like 10% the size of Texas to power the entire country.
Yeah. It was like 10% the size of like... What's a square state? Like Delaware or something.
Yeah.
And in that square was an even tinier square, a tenth the size of that square, that was batteries.
Yeah.
So just a tenth the size of Delaware of solar panels just on roofs and stuff like that, not taking up any unnecessary space.
Mm-hmm.
And a tenth of that size batteries stored maybe just in those buildings or maybe also on the roofs or something. I don't know. And you power the entire country.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good to me. So I guess that's enough about Tesla.
Yeah.
Although I could talk about Tesla all day.
I know you can, but let's move on.
Oh, quick note. If anybody watches like the live stream of the announcement event, I'm the guy that yells out, "Save us, Elon."
No, it's not.
What?
Is that really you?
Yeah.
I thought that was someone else.
No.
I was reading a thread about like people discussing the announcement. It's like someone mentioned the freaking hecklers at Elon, and I think they were talking about you.
No, I wasn't heckling. I was just having some fun. He even laughed. Everybody was laughing. It was fine. So yeah, that's funny. All
right. I didn't know that was you.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
Yeah. So next topic.
I mean, do you want to talk about the Galaxy S6 Edge, or do you want to talk about the NASA's new warp drive quote?
I guess let's stick with consumer first. So the S6 Edge came out kind of a little while ago now, actually, April 10th.
Yeah, we already had a discussion on like the specs and what it's like, but
yeah, so I bought it. And funnily enough, though, the what is it called again? Like something black, sapphire black. The sapphire black color.
Yeah.
Was made months before the other colors, presumably because they anticipated it would be the most popular color, which I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, there were some manufacturing problems and defects, I assume, that were still left in the manufacturing process when they were making these that they solved with the other colors. So the screen is actually inferior on the Sapphire Black so far in these production runs than the other colors. So maybe you want to keep that in mind if you're like on the fence about the colors or something.
That's why I never buy things when they first come out.
Yeah, that's a little weird. This is the first time I've heard of something that big being a problem with a launch product. And again, this isn't really a publicized thing. This is something I looked up and people were like, yeah, it's kind of weird it's being so quiet, but it's noticeably inferior.
Well, most people won't recognize it, to be honest.
I guess, but...
Or they'll see it and get used to it and never think about it again.
Maybe. But the screen is dimmer, the whites are yellower, and on the very edges of the screen, at least on the edge variant, there is discoloration at the very edge. The viewing angles are slightly off. So, okay. It, like I said, if you're on the fence about the colors, you may want to go with a different one. The other color like that, I forgot what it's called, like the gold-white one.
Yeah, the one that kind of looks like platinum or something.
Yeah, it's a little bit garish. But I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, it looks kind of like almost like a phone version of a DeLorean or something with the curved screen and everything. but yeah, it's pretty garish and it's pretty flashy. So that's why I didn't go with it. And you know, but whatever. So moving on to the actual edginess.
Yeah, because that's the only real difference.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's gonna become a design standard. Of course, no one else will think that until Apple copies it.
Do you really think Apple will do it, though?
Maybe. I mean, Steve Jobs himself said this company will never manufacture a phone larger than whatever the phone he last made before he died.
Okay.
And now look at the 6 Plus.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Apple is just absolutely playing just catch up at this point. They just wait for everyone else to innovate, and then they perfect. And
yeah.
So, I mean, that's been their business model for a while now. Like I said, I love it. It feels really nice. Again, this one is all glass except for the aluminum border. It feels, like I said, really like a premium product because it's, again, it has a really nice finish. Although, unfortunately, that makes it extremely delicate, especially the borders. Because it's all glass, it's extremely slippery. Extremely slippery. And I just had it resting on my lap in my car, and it fell off my lap in my car, maybe like 8 inches, like 4 or 6 inches.
That's not unique to the Edge, though. The S6 is also that slippery.
Yeah, yeah. So they're both as slippery, again, because this product line has got a glass back. So it slipped off my lap onto the side of my seat and hit like a little rail as part of my seating. And when I picked it up, there was a big... like a nick or a notch on the side of the phone, right, on the aluminum border. So when it was in the return window date for Best Buy, so I went and returned and got another one.
But let's talk about the edges a little bit.
Yeah.
Do they, I mean, from what I understand, they don't provide really any unique features that the edges can give, but they just make like everyday things look nicer.
Yeah. So viewing anything on the edge seems to almost have a sort of depth. Like, you know those, like, snow globes that aren't, like, full globes, but they're kind of, like, half domes?
Not really.
No? Well, anyone listening, if you know what that is, that's kind of what this looks like in a good way. It looks like it has a depth to it. And when viewing certain colored items, it seriously looks like it's popping out. Like, I have a stock trading app on here, and so there's a lot of green and red, and it looks like it's 3D. I'm not entirely sure why, and that kind of trips me out, but it really looks like it's popping out for some reason.
I mean, because it looks like it's curving back and going into the third dimension, so it feels like it's... I'm assuming that's why.
Yeah, I guess so. And again, it feels really nice. It's really nice glass. Swiping your thumb over it feels really nice. So this is by far like my favorite phone in a long, long time.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people, like, I think Samsung projected something like 25% of their sales to be Edges versus regular S6s, and that it's actually turning out to be something like 50%.
Yeah. So I definitely recommend it. Just keep in mind the color thing, and this might be the first phone that I actually buy a case for, maybe.
Really?
Maybe.
All right.
Because the border is so delicate. Like I said, I dropped like 4 inches and it put a pretty noticeable notch inside.
Okay.
So, again, if it wasn't for that aluminum problem, this would be like the perfect phone and the screen problem.
I mean, but what could you put if not aluminum? Would you rather really have plastic there?
No.
Okay. So it's not really their fault.
Yeah. So trade-offs with everything, just keep that in mind. The camera is amazing. Onboard image stabilization, so it's on a gyroscopic, it's on a gimbal, so it's super clear, it's super stable. I mean, I could talk about this phone all day, so yeah, it's great. Super fast memory, super fast, blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about all that crap.
Yeah, okay. All right, so first-hand experience, he likes it. It's definitely worth a try if you're thinking about getting a new phone, going to your carrier store and, I don't know, play with it for a couple minutes, see how you like it. But let's move on to a little bit more of a hardcore science topic. NASA. All right. So a couple of days ago, you might have heard that NASA created a warp drive, and you know, all our travel concerns have all been eliminated. We're going to bend space time to our will, and we'll be in Jupiter in half a second.
Oh, yeah. Call me Matthew McConaughey, baby.
And that may happen sometime in the future, or it may even be this. But from preliminary understandings of it, it's not warp drive. But they have created something cool by accident. I'm not sure what they were trying to create, but what they got was an engine that could push you forward without thrust. And we were actually talking about this a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the electric plane, mm-hmm. and how storing power in space is cool and all, but unless you have some kind of thrust, you can't really use it to move,
because mm-hmm.
you can't really have like a propeller because there's nothing to push. Mm-hmm. It's a vacuum for the most part. But what we were talking about was, wouldn't it be cool if we had a way of just using energy to move without having to have something to push away, because eventually you run out of that thing to push away.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what that is. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why this works, and neither do the physicists, because right now people are all scrambling. It's one of those things where you discover something and you explain how it works later on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty cool in that way, because we got all these people like running around with their heads cut off, like, oh, this is why it works. And usually with science, you predict what's going to happen, but sometimes you get this where something happens and you have to explain it afterwards, and that's what this is. So the way it works in a very simple way is, you got a chamber, and you have these microwaves bouncing around in that chamber interacting with each other, and for some reason, that creates about 50 micronewtons of thrust.
Mm-hmm.
And to give you a sense of scale, let's say you're a 130-pound person. That's about 60 kilograms. You exert about 600 newtons of thrust, force,
mm-hmm.
on when you're standing on the Earth. So 50 micronewtons is 50 times 10 to the power of -6, which is 0.5 zeros, and then 50. So mm-hmm. it's a very small amount, but just the fact that you don't need to push something away to get that thrust is very important. And it's not like CERN, where they found this particle traveling faster than the speed of light, and they figured it's because they crossed their wires in the wrong way, and all the physicists were saying, that's impossible, you messed up. NASA created this, and they've created it in other controlled environments, and they've gotten the same result. Other institutions have created the same thing in controlled environments in a vacuum and have gotten the same result. So in terms of replication, it has happened. Unless those groups of people have made the exact same mistakes without coordinating with each other, it seems like this is going to be a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You're in space. You got your solar panels. You got your microwaves bouncing around in your chamber, and you can you can theoretically go on forever without running out of fuel, because as long as you're in you're basking in some radiation, you can collect its power and you can use it to move around.
All right, sounds good for Hot Pockets too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So I mean, I've seen like heat maps of the engine, and like I've seen how it's like looks like it's hotter at the back of the engine.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was like freaking out about that. I'm like, oh, well, that's cool. So thrust without pushing something.
Yeah, it feels very weird because it is. I mean, and it's been something that's been a problem for as long as we've known, because it's a very simple concept that you learn in your first semester of physics. It's the conservation of momentum of a system. You push mm-hmm. something away, you've changed the momentum of that object, you and that object are in the system, so you have to move the other way so that the system contains its momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically how everything has worked up until now. You're in a spatial, you're pushing fuel down by igniting it, and you go in the opposite direction to conserve the momentum of the system of the fuel and the rocket. It's just how everything has worked, and that's how it has to be for things to work. And I mean, anything that defies that is going to be such a high-level thing that I probably won't understand it unless I get a PhD in physics and I'm working in that field. And anything that can do that, probably most people won't understand. It's going to be some alien-like physicist that says, oh, yeah, that's why it works.
Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that. I can't even think of an analogy for that.
Because it's just these microwaves bouncing around in a chamber creating thrust. It's very weird. Why would that happen unless some of the microwaves are escaping, but then you'd be able to measure that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, first thing I want to say is that, like, so before we talked about, like, solar wind, mm-hmm. you're talking about, like, how even on, like, an extremely tiny level, you can get some force from the radiation,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, you just accrue that massively, and then you get a result.
I mean, the reason that works is, I was talking to Casey earlier about having a solar sail. It was a problem I had to do on a physics exam, where you have this giant reflective surface, and when photons bounce off of it, it gives you a small amount of force. But that's very analogous to having very small projectiles bounce off you, even though they technically don't have mass, they have momentum because of their frequency and stuff.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit complicated, but the main reason is you have like very small objects bouncing off of you. This isn't that.
I know. So that's the first thing I want to go to, though. So I'm thinking, is it like that again, where it's just like an extremely tiny force just compounded, but it doesn't sound
but
like
But in
it.
Order for that to happen, something would have to bounce off of it, and that's not what's happening. You have this chamber, like a box, with these microwaves bouncing off the walls of the chamber, interacting with each other, adding to each other's wave, destructively and additively interfering with each other, giving themselves like different troughs and peaks based on how they do that, and somehow that creates some kind of force, 50 mm-hmm. micronewtons.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very odd, and I'm glad I'm not the only one who doesn't understand it. Apparently, every physicist in the world doesn't understand it, so they're all scrambling together to see who the first one can crack why it works.
Yeah.
But when this was first discussed, the headlines were like warp drive. It creates a space-time distortion behind you and in front of you to propel you forward, and that's not quite how it's working. So this will provide some very interesting advancements when it comes to deep space travel. As in terms, people are talking about 70-day trips to Mars using this technology, but it's still in the lab phase. It's nowhere near being implemented.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very dangerous to implement something because you get a certain result out of it without knowing why it works. Because if you don't know why it works or how it works, maybe there's some unknown interaction that can occur while you're in space that can screw it all up disastrously.
Yeah, like, you know, everyone getting extremely spontaneous and aggressive cancer or something.
I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just thinking about like maybe a certain frequency.
Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Maybe a certain frequency of light hits it and all of a sudden it's a worthless engine and you're trapped in space.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff can happen if you don't know why something works. And you can only brute force test it so much. You'll always be missing something that could happen unless you understand why it works and how it works.
Mm-hmm. You know how their ship works in Futurama?
No.
It doesn't move. It moves the entire universe around it.
I mean, that's just relativity. I'm not moving. I'm staying still. You're moving.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm like,
That's probably a running joke because I know the writers and producers of that show have like PhDs in physics from Harvard and stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. But I'm just like struggling to find an analogy. But I mean, I guess if no one even understands how it works, you can't even make an analogy for it yet.
Yeah. Another joke I heard on that show was there's like some kind of horse race, and the doctor, the old guy, what's his name?
Professor Farnsworth.
Professor Farnsworth, he says, "You cheated. You changed the result by measuring it."
Yeah.
That's a quantum mechanics joke.
Yeah.
Because if you measure something, you change it.
Yeah.
We actually talked about that.
Yeah.
A lot of smart jokes on that show, and maybe it might be what we become, you know, with this propellant-less engine.
Yeah. My favorite episode was the one where Bender overclocks himself by water cooling himself. I think it runs on like an AMD Athlon. They open them up and there's like an AMD Athlon patch in that.
Well, it's nice to know that AMD survives.
Yeah, for another 1,000 years, however that happens.
Who did they get acquired by? I know they got acquired by someone. Do you happen to remember?
Comedy Central.
No, AMD.
Oh, AMD. I know the ATI got acquired by AMD a while ago.
No, AMD got acquired by someone else.
I have no idea.
Well, all right. I think that's all we have for today.
Yeah. So you've been listening to the Memory Dump 64 a bit. I'm your host, Casey Spencer.
I'm Simon Tutuk.
And have a wonderful day filled with qubits and pushless thrust and other such things.
Propellantless thrust. And Casey kept saying kilowatt instead of kilowatt hour, saying power using...
I said kilowatt hour a couple times.
Yeah, but you said kilowatt a couple times too. Kilowatt is
kill
power.
Kill your watt.
Kilowatt is power. Kilowatt kill hour is energy.
Kill you.
All right.
Killer Radio.
Thanks for listening.
Killer Feed.